Forever Dog.
Hey, you know how Sideways, the movie Sideways, like affected Merlot sales?
Yes.
Merlot sales went down.
Yes.
Because Paul Giamatti said, I'm not drinking any Merlot.
And I'm drinking any of this Merlot.
What do you think? Do you think American Pie affected the sales of pies?
Skyrocketed.
Yeah. I feel like it probably would go up.
Skyrocketed. Yeah. When every man in America realized they could F pie.
I could have been fucking a pie this whole time. On today's episode of Weekend at Bergman's, we're kicking off our 1999 series with two 1999 movies about effing. Representing the art house, it's Stanley Kubrick's final film, Eyes Wide Shut. And representing the mainstream, it's American Pie. This is the first time I'm getting a look at myself in this costume. Maybe I'll take these glasses off. This nose is really getting in the way. I'm trying to stay on the mic. If you're listening at home, I have a Venetian plague mask on in honor of Eyes Wide Shut. Joe, if we can get a look at Joe real quick. Joe is, you were supposed to dress like American Pie. I think you forgot how this works. You also apparently dressed like someone who is trying to sneak into the Eyes Wide Shut orgy.
No, I'm unbeknownst to many. I'm Stifler. He was at the orgy.
Stifler was at the orgy?
He was at the orgy. Yeah, this is my Stifler costume. He was at the orgy.
He is very rich, as you can tell. Yes. from American Pie. That doesn't sound out of character for him. I feel like I'm the guy at the orgy who's just sits at the bar the whole time and is like, "Hey, can we get the game on the TV? Is that possible?"
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know they had the game on the TV at the orgies. Maybe I'll go.
What game?
No, like Eagles Bills.
Human roulette.
Bucks Patriots.
Joe, are you ready to start to kick this damn Weekend of Bergman's off? Kick off our 1999 series?
You know it, Brett.
All right, Margo, then roll that theme song. Oh, you love to hear it. You love to hear it. Every week, you and I watch two movies together. Well, not quite together, because we watch them apart. You at your house and me at mine. Whoa! Every week, we watch the same two movies. If I say Fidelio, can I please come to your orgy? But how do we choose these two movies? Well, one is a brilliant, beautiful work of cinematic art, the height of the medium, and the other one is mainstream. I'm talking popcorn, baby, Hollywood endings, but what happens when we watch them back to back, and we had to say which one we like better, and we have to be honest, welcome.
Gotta be honest.
Welcome to Weekend at Bergman's.
Gotta be honest.
We're gonna watch an art house movie and a mainstream movie. We're gonna tell you which one we like better.
That one's gonna go in the canon.
And the one that we like better, Margie, you can fade out the music.
It's gonna go in the canon.
It's gonna go in the canon.
And the one that we don't like.
The one that we did not like as much is gonna go in the trash canon. We can never watch it again for the rest of our lives.
Simple show.
Why do we do this to ourselves?
Never again and never again. We're never going to again watch Eyes Wide Shut or American Pie, Brett. And I wonder which one it'll be. But let's talk film.
I don't know.
Well, we have to find out.
I don't know.
Let's interrogate.
I think I know because I will choose which one I like better. You'll choose which one you like better. And if it's a dead heat, if we choose different movies, we got to throw it over to the Patreon. This mask is killing me. I'm not going to lie. This is a piece of work. People in Venice just wore these things around.
Maybe they were a little bit. They weren't from Party City.
It looks cool. I feel like I'm in Knife.
No, Brett, it doesn't look cool.
Like I'm in the Knife.
Looks bad.
Really, I like this look. I might lean in. Oh, here's my camera. Here, I gotta look in the camera, but then I can't see myself. Oh, there we go. Gotta split the diff. Split the diff. There we go. There is a poll right now up on Patreon. If you are watching this, that means you are a Patreon subscriber. Thank you. Thank you. There's a poll right now up on Patreon if you want to chime in while you're watching. Favorite Kubrick movie of all time? And in the spirit of Bergman's, you got to be honest. Because look, sometimes your first thought is not the honest thought. Sometimes the thought, we all do this, sometimes the thought is, what am I supposed to say? Or what was the most, what did I think sort of, you know, what did I think the best movie was? I want to know what your favorite Kubrick movie is. I want to know what your favorite Kubrick movie is. Chime in on the poll. We'll see where the poll is at the end. Oh, people already chiming in. People already chiming in. Right now it's a dead heap. Right now it's a dead heap. Hit dead heap between 2001 and Clockwork Orange. Oh. So if either of those are not your favorite Kubrick movies, make sure you chime in to let you have your voice be heard. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna vote too.
Vote
at the end because I don't know.
I'm gonna vote too
because after I hear your take on Eyes Wide Shut, my take on Eyes Wide Shut, maybe Eyes Wide Shut will be my favorite Kubrick movie. I don't know until I've heard the takes.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to start with? What should we talk about first?
Well, I think we're going to start with American Pie. We're thinking 1999 all season long.
Yes.
And you know what we're going to do? Alphabetical order. American Pie first. Alphabetical order.
Got it. So each week we'll just go with the alphabetical.
That's the fairest. That's the fairest. Because like I remember in season one, going last, it's helpful.
It is helpful.
It's helpful.
It is helpful. But, so we have to leave it up to chance. Leave it up to the fates.
American Pie.
All right, let's talk about American Pie. Start me off here, because this movie, I got to say, we there's about a 10-year age gap between us.
That's right.
I'm on the older side. So 1999 for me was sophomore, junior year of high school. This was a key year for me. This was a year I remember all these movies coming out in theaters. I remember going to many of them. I remember the phenomenon of American Pie when it happened. What about you? In 1999, do you remember American Pie?
I remember from that time in my life when I was in second or third grade. What do I remember? There was one thing that dominated conversation, and that was Stifler's mom. Stifler's mom was all I really knew about this movie for a couple of years until I put two and two together. Where I was like, oh, that's from this movie, American Pie. And then in high school, I guess I watched it, you know, down the shore with like my buddies. We all like, haha, we watched American Pie. But at first, it was just like Stifler's mom for years, Brett.
Because this was
that was like the joke of the decade. Right. That was the
and this was where
thing.
We got at least the popularization of the term MILF came from American Pie.
That's what I learned when I rewatched. Is this where this comes from? Or popularization.
First time I had heard it. First time I definitely.
They were really spelling it out as if they were, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if it's picking, the first time it was ever used. Probably not. But it was the first time it was used sort of in
for you.
Popular cinema, I believe. Okay. So American Pie, you want me to kick it off?
I'm
going to kick American Pie off. You kick Eyes Wide Shut off.
It was
Does
important.
That, sound good?
That sounds amazing.
Okay. So I'll be honest, I was not looking forward to rewatching American Pie. Because, you know, I've gotten, you know, sort of old and grumpy. And I was like, I got to watch frickin' American Pie. I got to sit down, take 2 hours of my life to rewatch American Pie. I will say I was, with some key exceptions, I was very pleasantly surprised by American Pie. It is, because we'll get to the scene, it's one of those movies now where the scene everyone talks about is you know, the sex crime that happens in the middle of the movie, right? Where they film Shannon Elizabeth's character undressing and masturbating without her knowledge and are streaming on the internet without her knowledge.
To the whole school.
Insane. Not just poor taste, criminal activity. And it's just crazy to me at the time that I don't remember anything. I mean, I'm sure there was smart with it people at the time who were like, hey, wait a second. But
not at your high school.
Like, because the thing is, it is not even presented with any equivocation or anything. It is presented as a sort of joyous teenage hijinks, right? The actors all are having fun with it. The directors clearly were having fun with it. Everyone's having fun with that scene in that moment. And it's a trademark scene in teen comedies of the 80s and 90s, right? Revenge of the Nerds famously has the scene where the woman is raped by the nerd who's supposed to be the hero of the movie because he disguises himself as her boyfriend. Animal House has scenes that are similar to this. So it's not something we haven't seen before. But that was, I will say, going back to this movie, that was what I had in my mind. I was like, oh, I got to go watch the movie where they like filmed Shannon Elizabeth getting naked. It's like, and in my mind, that was the tenor of the movie. It was very much sort of boys, you know, boys being boys and locker room talk and all these 90s euphemisms for just sort of like, you know, sexist, you know, anti-feminist trash. With the exception of that scene, I did not find that to be the theme or the tone of the entire movie. And again, we're being honest. People are going to like, I don't expect like me, like liking American Pie to be a popular take, but I'm being honest. And this is the way the movie struck me on this rewatch is that, the tone of the entire movie is actually very different from that scene. The arc of the movie is it does the classic thing of kids, of guys, high school guys losing their virginity. They have a contest. They've all got to lose their virginity before they go to college. But what is required for all of them to lose their virginity is very interesting. What is required of them is they have to learn that sex is reciprocal. They have to learn. One character literally has to go get a book and learn how to go down on his girlfriend. But that is part of a that's like the set piece. But there is a bigger theme at work in the movie of like all these guys learning that sex is not just about male pleasure or the male gaze, that sex has to be reciprocal and involve reciprocal pleasure. They have to learn to respect their partner. They have to learn how to communicate. They have to learn how to listen. They have to be humiliated. They have to be sort of emasculated in many ways, and they have to, and you know, with the exception of like, you know, Stifler, the Sean William Scott character, is just the funny douchebag who remains a funny douchebag for the entire movie. All the other characters change in some pretty like, you know, significant ways. And so it's such a shame that that scene is in there, because to me that is not that is really not the sort of tenor of the movie. The movie, I think what they were trying to do, because this movie did revive the teenage sex comedy, and that's one of the themes that we're going to look at in 1999, is 1999, you don't just have American Pie, you have Cruel Intentions, 10 Things I Hate About You, She's All That. It was a big, big year for teenage movies, for like teenage sex movies. And those are the movies, as a high schooler, those are the ones I remember. Those to me define the year and made it a huge year in movies because of those four right there. And so American Pie was a big part of that. But to me, what the Weitz brothers are doing here, the director writers, is that they're reviving the like 80s sex comedy, which I don't think had been, there hadn't been sort of, it had sort of gone out of fashion. They're reviving the like lose your virginity sex comedy. I do think in their sort of like dated late 90s way, they were trying to update it by having all the guys have to sort of go through this like transformation in order to have sex. I think that's what they were trying to do. The streaming, like the internet streaming scene, is obviously like a big miss in that direction. But for overall, I think that feels like that was the point of the movie. It's a very funny movie. It's still very funny. A lot of the jokes still land. There's a silliness to the movie that is very refreshing. Eugene Levy crushes. Jennifer Coolidge crushes. Eugene Levy is so funny in this movie. I did not think I was going to laugh as much as I did at his. He is so funny. I love how supportive. So I love how supportive he is of his son jacking off. And like, I love the conversations they have around sex. They're so funny. He's a good dad. I don't know. He's like
wonderful dad.
He's a great dad, and he's funny. And so many amazing needle drops. I made a listen to these.
The soundtrack is crazy.
Listen to these three, the soundtrack and the way the soundtrack is deployed. Dude. There is not a more late 90s soundtrack out there. Listen to these three needle drops. Okay. You have Bare Naked Ladies into Sean William Scott pounding shots at a house party. You have Harvey Danger into Jason Biggs creating an online dating profile on like Web 1.0, right, the earliest stage of the internet. You have Hole into Thomas Ian Nicholas going down on Tara Reid.
That was awesome.
There are three insane, those alone, those three needle drops are unreal and just put me in a freaking time capsule and took me back to the late 90s. I love the soundtrack. I love the music. Blink-182 makes a cameo perving out over the internet video. This is a tough one for me. It was not, I will say this, definitely not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Minus that one scene, aged better than I thought it was going to age. I don't know, Joe. I don't know.
This you one, really liked American Pie.
I had fun watching American Pie. I'm sorry if you respect me less because of that. That's fine. I respect you for that. For respecting me less. Or maybe you're listening to me and you're saying, huh, well, maybe I'll go rewatch American Pie. I don't know. But it was better than I thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, me too.
All right, give it to me, Joe.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live at the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
American Pie. I honestly didn't know what to think. I just hadn't seen it in millennia. So I threw it on. And I got to tell you, Brett and folks, it has like four or five like laughs. Like, I was alone watching the movie. When you are alone and you laugh, you know it's a good laugh. And I had like five laughs. These four, five friends have to go through a Salo-esque, hellish line of degradation.
Salo-esque.
Yes, the most degrading humiliations in order to achieve their goal of losing their virginity, which they all learn is, you know, just a thing that happens and is pretty, you know, if it's good, it's good. It's not the end of the world. But they, in order to reach Nirvana, they have to go to the depths of hell. And I'll tell you why the movie was so funny is because it pairs the sort of raunchy sex comedy hijinks that you are familiar with in the genre with, like, the guys always get theirs. You know, in movies when, oh, this guy's being really bad to her, and then he gets his head lopped off and it feels oh so good. Well, these guys are really bad, right? But holy moly, do they stick the landing on these bits when the boys have to get humiliated. Sure, it's aggressively juvenile and grotesque. It is like, it is American Pie. It is the teenage sex comedy of the 90s. But Lord have mercy, Jason Biggs had me on the floor, Eugene Levy, Jennifer Coolidge. I mean, there's a reason that people were talking about Stifler's mom, because the joke is so funny, and Jennifer Coolidge is so funny. You know, they make, back then in 99, Brett, it's like, oh, time to make a raunchy sex comedy. Don't forget to get legendary comedians to make the funny movie good.
Yep.
Go get, oh, who should we get? Like an influencer? No, those don't exist. Go get comedians like Jennifer Coolidge and Eugene Levy.
And we didn't mention Natasha Lyonne is in this.
Natasha Lyonne is in this. The cast is out of control. Anyway, I was totally... American Pie isn't some great film. I'm not saying I recommend it, but what I am saying is if you find yourself watching it, it's very funny. It's nostalgic. You know, not everything has to be so difficult to watch. Sometimes it's just some fucking bullshit. You get to laugh. The past was crazy, folks. American Pie, Brett? I'm a fan.
Wow. Okay.
I'm a fan.
This is going to be tougher than I thought it was going to be. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know what's funny? Also, just to say it before we move on, Stifler is like, of all the like, oh, the John Belushi's, the Will Ferrells and Old Schools, all like the crazy funny guys, Stifler has like zero to do. He doesn't like get the big set piece gags. He doesn't have the big funny, I'm the dumb guy moments. Sean William Scott essentially decides I'm going to be this generation's Fonzie based on pure charisma, like a Jim Carrey-esque level of, you know what, I'm just going to like steal the scene even though I'm not saying anything. There's no reason Stifler should be in our collective imagination. But Sean William Scott, shout out to you. I hope you're having a good evening, friend.
Sean William Scott nailed that role, nailed that character. And you're right. You forget because he just makes a meal out of every line, everything. Remember how it starts, the first cut to him with Bare Naked Ladies playing? And then the Weitz Brothers do kind of an insane, like the Goodfellas Copacabana tracking shot.
They
have like a huge tracking shot through the party following Stifler. And every motion, everything he does is just so... perfectly suited to that character, to just like the like popular, rich, just empty headed, mean but dumb, like, you know, harmful but also harmless, like that guy. He just nails every aspect of that character.
It's a throwback. And it had me smiling in spite of myself, slash I don't care, I'll smile when I want to smile.
Yeah, look, It was surprising. I was surprised how much I enjoy it. And the funny part about our premise here is that I will likely never have an inclination. We have to be honest.
Yeah.
I will likely never have an inclination to watch it again, though. But that can't come into play. That can't come into play here.
But what'd you think about Eyes Wide Shut?
Okay, great. So I'll kick off Eyes Wide Shut. You don't mind?
Then we go for it, man.
So you don't have to do two in a row. Okay. Eyes Wide Shut is such an enigma of a movie. And you kind of have to start. You have to start like a couple steps back with Eyes Wide Shut. Like American Pie, I don't give a shit where it came from, who wrote it, why they wrote it, nothing. It's a movie. It exists as a movie exists. It's in your fucking cinema on a Friday night. That's all you need to know. Eyes Wide Shut, you need, like, requires context because it is a fucking puzzle box of a movie. And the first mystery is, why was this movie so personal and central to Kubrick himself? Because, you know, you see in that poll, this guy made so many classic movies, so many bangers, so many sort of rich canvas movies, so many sort of long epic movies, right? And this ultimately is a kind of smaller, simpler, condensed movie. It's a weird movie. It's a surreal movie. It's hard sometimes to sort of figure out the tone of it. But this movie, Eyes Wide Shut, cannot be treated as an anomaly when you're talking about Kubrick. In fact, if you're going by his own sort of testimony, you have to treat it as central, almost central most to his artistic vision and his work as a director, because he initially bought the rights to this. It's an Arthur Schnitzler story, who's a writer in Vienna at the turn of the century, what they call the fin de siècle in Vienna, an incredibly rich intellectual time. Sigmund Freud was there in Vienna at the time. Lots of writers and painters were there. Wittgenstein, the philosopher, was born there at that time, right? A lot, like much of the 20th century comes out of Vienna, or at least, I should say the Western, you know, East and Western European 20th century comes out of Vienna. But this is not a classic work of literature. This is not anything that anyone, and I think that's why he likes stuff like Barry Lyndon and this, is because no one knows those texts, so no one's going to hold them to any sort of, like, you know, fidelity. No one's going to hold him to any sort of fidelity to it. But he optioned it in the 60s. Man. He optioned. This movie came out in 1999, as we know. He optioned in the 60s. He was trying
when the
to
office
make it,
got the call for the option, they were like, what? Yeah, what? That's
Arthur Schnitzler.
How much is that?
Yeah.
$100.
Yeah, $100. Should we say 100?
It's a short story from what? Vienna and the what?
He'll do 100. He'll buy it for 100. So he buys it in the 60s. He's trying to make it over and over in between all the big movies everyone knows. Your Barry Lyndon's, your Clockwork Orange, your 2001s. This guy keeps going back to Eyes Wide Shut, keeps trying to make it, can't get it done, can't get it financed, can't get the stars for it, this and that. He finally gets the two biggest stars in the world at the height of their powers to be in it. And to Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman's credit, they put their entire lives and careers on hold to get this movie made. They moved to England with him. Even though the movie seems simple, it almost seems like it could have been shot in 3 months. This movie took a long time to make because Kubrick, as you know,
does
tons of takes and edits and reshoots and all this. They moved their entire family to England. They lived in England while this was being made. Tom Cruise was so big. He's coming off of the first Mission Impossible. He's coming off tons of big stuff. Nicole Kidman was getting very big at this point. They could have done anything, and they decided to make Stanley Kubrick's last movie with him. And of course, didn't hurt their careers at all. They came back and had giant careers, even bigger careers after that. But it was a huge risk to essentially fall off the face of the earth for 1, 2, 3 years to make this one movie. And of course, it's Kubrick, but you know, it's like, it's a different kind of Kubrick movie.
It makes me think very highly of them.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
You know what I mean? Because they commit to it so hard. And you can tell that they, in the marketing of the movie, but also in the substance of the movie, Kubrick really, he found the way to get this done, he finally figured out, was to sort of make it about Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. Because that was the way the movie was marketed. Nobody knew anything about the plot before it came out. All they knew was Cruise, Kidman, Kubrick. That's all we were told, and these sort of cryptic images and stuff. And so eventually this project he'd been sitting with for 30 years, it becomes about Cruise and Kidman as much as it's about anything else. And that seems to be what got it over the finish line for him at the end, was not just their star power, but their dynamic and their marriage and kind of some of the weirdness around their marriage as well and their relationship. Kubrick also apparently referred to it as like his his purest cinematic expression, Eyes Wide Shut. So it's like it's a movie that I know it's tempting to think of it as this weird late stage, late career outlier. It's for him, it was not. For him, it was the movie.
It's the culmination.
And so the question is, why? Why this? What does that mean about Kubrick? What was he trying to accomplish here? And because Kubrick, you know, as much of an auteur as he was, worked almost exclusively in genre movies, war movies, sci-fi, dystopian sci-fi and space sci-fi, period pieces, noir, right? I mean, he mostly worked war movies. He mostly worked, I think I said that already, he works in genre. This is, I don't, what genre is this? This doesn't have a genre. I mean, like, edging
it's
into...
It's tempting to say, like, erotic thriller, psychosexual, right? But it's none of those
It's
things.
Too funny and silly it's and weird for that.
It's its own thing.
So what is the deal? And maybe that's what he liked about it, was the genre movies, even though he turned them into high art, that a lot of the genre movies maybe felt more like jobs to
you know
him
what
than this movie.
You brought up something earlier this week, like the genre parts of it, though it's not the sexiest movie ever, sometimes it has like a porno quality.
Yes.
It's like high pornography.
It is.
It might be the genre.
Where I want to start, and I'm about to start using the F word a lot in quick succession if you have anybody in the room that you don't that shouldn't be hearing that. But I have to start using that word because to me, Joe, Eyes Wide Shut is about fucking. That's what the movie is ultimately about. And I don't mean that it's about sex or making love or relationships or even sort of a marriage as such. This movie is about fucking. And what I mean by that is it is about the type of sex that exists at the core of lust, the most lustful sort of the type of sexual desire that is kind of close to violence, right? In the Freudian, you know, what is it? Eros and Thanatos, Freud says. Sex and violence are sort of at the root of our being, more closely linked than we would like to acknowledge that they are. This is, you know, the type of sex that determines so much of our identity, sort of pure hardcore fucking, right? But something that we don't want to talk about a lot to this day or acknowledge, something that we want to sort of, by the time it bubbles up into our lives, it gets filtered through other sort of more like, you know, socialized parts of ourselves. It gets filtered through family and relationships, and it gets filtered through sort of jobs and status and social etiquette, and sort of gets filtered into something sort of that's not in its essence what it is, which is just this desire to fuck and be fucked, right? That most basic desire. That's to me what this movie is ultimately about, because. And he doesn't hide it. There is no scene or discussion in this movie that is not about sex at some level. And not so much like relationships or marriage. Like, it really, everybody is just always talking and thinking about fucking in this movie. And it expresses itself in a lot of different ways. Like you said, Joe, I think this movie, some of the early, particularly the early scenes, feel like they are like... feel like scenes in a porno before the everybody starts having sex, right? They feel like porno lead up scenes. The scene in the when they go to that party and you think they're just going to some fancy cocktail party, everyone is on the verge of hardcore fucking at all times at that party, right? Nicole Kidman's being seduced by that amazing like
handsome debonair silver
debonair
fox
lover.
Love that guy.
He's amazing. You know what? The actor's name is Sky DeMont. You know something crazy? Because all this, if you haven't seen Eyes Wide Shut lately, this is the character that like dances with Nicole Kidman and tries to seduce her at the party they go to, and is just pouring on the line so hard. He is in the German version of Thomas the Tank Engine. He's the narrator of the German version of Thomas the Tank Engine. Just a funny little side
shout
note,
out
right?
to the
but
to
he
the
is
toddlers
like
out there.
Giving sex so much. When he walks up to Nicole Kidman, the first thing he does is he takes her champagne glass and she says, "I think that's mine," and he says, "I'm sure of it," and then drinks the entire thing without breaking eye contact.
Hey, that's my move.
Oh my god. This movie is so porny, and I love the porniness of it. And meanwhile, Tom Cruise is about to have a threesome with two models. Like this, I literally thought they were just going to some high society party and there's going to be a lot of chatting.
Honey.
There was also a thought, though, where I was like, the first time I saw it, though, I was like, is this just the game, though, of like how much can we flirt without actually getting physical? Is this just people restless in their marriage and that's the game? Hard cut to Sidney Pollack, who we had just previously seen with his wife greeting people at the door because he's doing the party. Hard cut to Sidney Pollack in an upstairs bathroom, putting his clothes back on, while there is a very attractive woman passed out on a couch who has just had a overdose, and they've been having sex and this and that. So I was like, oh no, okay, got it. Everybody's actually like trying to fuck and are fucking or in some stages of it, right? At the same time, going into Sidney Pollack might be my favorite performance in the movie, because Sidney Pollack is terrifying in this movie. This is one of a guy who I think in his, you know, a great director in his own right, a great actor, particularly when he gets roles like this, because Sidney Pollack, nobody is better at giving us like the satanic menace of like the ruling class. You know what I mean? Like, yes. He is so chilling. He is so powerful and so unconcerned with anybody except himself, but in a way that where he doesn't even have any sort of, he's incapable of guilt, shame, anything, right? All he wants is for this, and by the way, he was with his wife down at the front, like greeting people. Less than an hour later, he's up in a bathroom with this model who overdosed, and all he wants is for her to get out of his house. Like, he has no concern for her. He just wants Tom Cruise to like fix the situation. Tom Cruise is a doctor, and get her out. And then Sidney Pollack, of course, appears later at the orgy, and then after the orgy, talking to Tom Cruise and telling him why he definitely should not have been there. And the entire time, you just get this like this menace, this like power and menace and evil from him, but in a way where it's not. There's no hamminess, there's no kitsch to it. He is just so good. I remember he played a similar character in Michael Clayton. He is so good at giving us like the sort of malice and sinisterness of the elites in this, in particularly in this country. So I love Sidney Pollack. But the orgy, Sidney Pollack, sex, fucking, it's not just about the thing itself. It's also, he uses fucking then to look at the way in which like power and money takes over sex and sort of makes sex into, as soon as it gets into the hands of Sidney Pollack and it gets into the hands of the people who are running the orgy, sex becomes exploitative, it becomes cruel, it becomes about money and power and ritual. I don't know if I'm any closer to like understanding the movie though.
That's fine.
You know, you sort of talk yourself in circles.
I have a lot of opinions and takes and thoughts.
It's also
but, like,
so
far
funny, and there's so
to,
many
like,
crazy like
the movie
characters in it, and it's like it's so funny and weird. And Kubrick says this was like his purest movie. It's just, it's a movie that I have been thinking about for a long time, and will continue to be thinking about for a long time. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was really good.
He liked it.
I liked it.
He liked it.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Is that insufficient of a response? You either love it or you hate it,
no,
is what you're saying?
No, of course. No. All right. Well, look, let me tell you.
I really liked Eyes Wide Shut. Okay. It's so weird. It's so
bizarre. Let me tell you what I liked about it.
Because I don't know how I didn't mention this. Nicole Kidman's fucking unbelievable in this movie.
Duh.
She's so good. She is so, so good in this movie. She took
her dress off in that one part towards the beginning, and you can see like her nude back. Me and my wife looked at each other and we're like, is that a human body?
It's the most beautiful. Like,
is that a human?
It's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
People don't look like this.
And she's
they don't look like
she's
this.
She's so funny, and she just loves like poking at Tom Cruise the whole movie and like making fun of him and like driving him crazy. Like, but she is so good in this. And that final line, the final line she says.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately fucking is like what I'm talking about, like just fucking animalistic, violent fucking, that thing inside of us, right?
My goodness.
It is a threat to a marriage, but it is also like the solution to marriages, right? It's kind of what the movie is also playing with. That like the whole time they are using like not love, fucking as a way of like sort of getting at each other, right? Because Nicole Kidman tells him about how she would have thrown her whole life away if that sailor at the resort would have spent a night with her, right? And she uses that to sort of press Tom's buttons and get into his mind. But at the end of the movie, they're going to go fuck, and that's going to save the marriage. It's going to save the situation because they're both going to get out of their heads for a second. They're going to clear the deck. Like, fucking is that, it's catharsis. It's that thing that sort of like wipes the slate clean in a way, right? In a scary way, in which she was saying, like, I could erase my entire marriage for one night with this sailor. Or we can just sort of erase all this bad vibes with one good roll in the hay, baby. What did you think of Eyes Wide Shut?
Wow. So Eyes Wide Shut is terrific. It took Kubrick, you know, 16, 17 months of shooting. Why? Kubrick famously does 60, 70, 80 takes. Harvey Keitel actually left this film Eyes Wide Shut because Kubrick made him walk into the room 68 times. So he quit, which is, I love Kubrick. But then when you watch the thing, something I realized upon this watch, Kubrick isn't doing 70 takes just for the actor. Like, it seems obvious now. Yes, the acting is part of it. But in Eyes Wide Shut, maybe one of the many reasons that Kubrick thought that this was his the accumulation of his career or what his artistic goals were is because just starting compositionally, the movie is perfect. This is what I've been using the word composition a lot recently, and I am obsessed with it. And we just talked about Denis Villeneuve, and he's obviously a big fan of composition. But there is a difference between the composition of absence and the composition of beauty, which Kubrick is a master at in this film, in all of his films, duh. But here we go again, just like in Barry Lyndon, we're using a ton of natural light. We're using the soft, diffusive Christmas lights. We're using like those Chinese paper balls to soften everything, to make things dreamlike, sure. But there's also moments of hard color, the reds and the blues in the film.
So beautiful. Such a lush,
everything
lush movie
that he is doing is incredible. His camera kind of swoops and moves in this film more than you might expect. But man, it starts in a perfect shot. And when he finishes the camera movement, it ends up in an absolutely perfect shot. The triangles, the way the lines work in the frame. The man understands painting. He understands filmmaking. He understands photography. Duh, he's Stanley Kubrick. Yep. And he's not kind of doing it this time.
Hugely famous photographer before he became a director, right? Yep. He was like Life magazine photographer.
All these great directors. Like, he has a bit of the nerd to him, like from a technical standpoint, a photography standpoint. And then, he's an avid reader and he's a weirdo and he won't fly and he makes everyone move to England and he subsumes their life. And that creates the marketing campaign for this film. But Kubrick took his time because he knew he was closer to death, you know? And he was like, I'm going to do this one perfectly. And these wimps over at whatever studio, they're not going to say boo. I'm Stanley effing Kubrick and I got Cruise and Kidman here. I'll take as long as I damn well please. And he does. And well, I'll guess his results were every shot is absolutely perfect. It is almost sacrilegious how beautiful this piece of filmmaking is. Also, I love in later Kubrick how his ratio aspect kind of becomes that ratio of television. The more and more that I watch film, I am convinced that unless you are Sergio Leone or literally Stanley Kubrick in 2001, folks, mat your frames. You fuckers don't know what to do with the left and right side of these things. Fucking fuck them. Stanley Kubrick doesn't know what to do with them either. So he just puts big black lines. Fuck it. We're shooting 185 or whatever it is or whatever. I'm doing TV lines and he makes these beautiful tall squares. I can only imagine how incredible this film must be to see in a movie theater. So that's what I want to start there. Image-wise, visual-wise,
and the way the camera moves through rooms and through the apartment and through the mansion at the end. I mean,
and how about
it's a gorgeous movie.
He shoots New York, so in England he builds Greenwich Village. So for those of us that have spent some time in New York, you're like, that looks just like New York. Kubrick actually sent like assistants to go measure how far is the mailbox from the door, right? So like, it's exactly like New York. But it's nothing like New York. Yes. It's completely dreamlike.
There's something,
it's incredible.
It's that thing Freud calls the uncanny, where something like is like familiar but unfamiliar at the same time. There's Kubrick's precision sort of matches New York, and there's a fidelity there. But like, there is something, you know, you're in a movie. You know, you're on a soundstage as well. There's something dreamy and fake.
The whole
about
movie,
the
you know, essentially, right, is like he dreams and this and she. You know, we're sort of following Tom Cruise with his dream slash nightmare. And Nicole Kidman is telling us about her dreams and nightmares. And at the end, like Brett alluded to, both characters say we need to like shake ourselves out of it, right? And reconnect.
We need to
sexually fuck. In order to get all these like bad blood out of our heads. And I do kind of feel like what you felt, Brett, that it is sort of like a clearing out of their bad juju.
Yeah.
But the movie to me, though, of course it's about sex. And of course fucking is a part of the film. Really what the film was about to me is not fucking, aka getting cucked, which is what Tom Cruise does from beginning to end. It's like the old
okay,
joke.
Yeah,
it's the only man who couldn't get laid at the orgy brought to life in 3 hours by Stanley Kubrick. You ask the question, why is he obsessed with this? From the second that pornography is available for like widescreen distribution, when Deep Throat was sort of, happening in the late 60s and sexuality was coming to cinema post the sexual or during the sexual revolution, Kubrick was enamored with, oh my God, what if they made a movie where really good actors in a really good shot did real sex or pornography or really sexual themes. You know, there were codes at this time. The ratings board goes up and down over the course of Kubrick's career, but Kubrick was always obsessed with this. And then the question's asked, why? Well, I think ultimately the answer why is like obvious if we step back, which is like, what else consumes everybody all day long but our sexual insecurities?
Right.
And it's the ultimate frontier. Like he did space, he did war. What hasn't he really commented on? And he's commented on sex plenty throughout the filmography, but not like this.
And that's why I was using like fucking, because I was trying to distinguish it from like, because so often like when a movie's about sex, it's more about relationships and it's more, or it's about a marriage or a dissolution of a marriage or this or that or infidelity or this. But like this movie is really about, it's about sex almost to the exclusion of other. It's like it narrows in, it focuses like every scene, every dialogue is about fucking and the way in which it fucks with our heads and fucks with our relationships, but it never like broadens out and like you don't really know like like they have a kid. The kid is irrelevant to the movie. You know, like there's no like their broader relationship beyond their sex life does not seem to be at all commented on.
No doubt. Look, the movie's focus is sex, of course. I think what I'm kind of harping on is why Kubrick's obsessed with it.
Yes,
and why it's an enduring movie is it deals with like a truth, which is, you know, what happens in this movie is Nicole Kidman tells Tom Cruise, I have these dreams where I get fucked by guys and I love it. And not just one, but sometimes many. And Kubrick inserts, it took him 3 days to shoot it, those like insanely grainy pornographic sort of flashes that Tom Cruise is haunted by of Nicole Kidman having sex with the sexy Navy man. And it eats at him. And Tom Cruise goes through the whole entire movie. He goes to the crazy orgy. He goes to the doctors. He goes to every place he goes. He gets cucked and blue-balled and built up and tense and
wait, filled. Let's actually count them because
there's so many.
He is like so close.
It's
to
just like American Pie
in this movie. So many times at the party initially, he almost has a threesome with the models.
I love that scene.
You don't even know, like, it's hard to know if he would go through with anything because he like there's these comical interruptions where he almost has a threesome with the models, but then they grab him because he needs to go like revive the woman who's overdosed upstairs. We never see him have sex with Nicole Kidman.
No.
There's the one scene where they are like embracing naked in the mirror, but they are, it's so clear they're both like watching themselves in the mirror. Like they're turned on by themselves more than by each other at this juncture in the marriage. And we don't actually see them consummate. So we don't know if they ever, it honestly seems the vibe is like they don't. Like it's one of those things where it kind of probably just sort of like, it probably like anti-climaxed into just sort of like cuddling in bed or something.
They got a 7-year-old.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, but I'm saying like
even
we
in
don't,
more
like,
intense.
My point is like in a movie full of sex, I don't think Tom Cruise like he.
No, that's why everybody didn't like the movie at first. Everyone was expecting, oh my God, Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise have been secret about this for 4 years
because
they're gonna.
We forgot Vanessa Shaw's. Sex worker character who he goes into her house.
Yeah, Domino.
They almost have sex.
Oh, right.
And then he calls her
prostitute. He ends up just paying her $150 for her time to hang out.
They like kiss, but they like barely. Their lips barely touch. And then in the at the orgy, there's that interesting moment where somebody, it might be like Sidney Pollack in disguise, someone brings one of the women like next to him to sort of like seemingly to like seduce him or take him off into another room. And then the woman, Mandy, who he had saved previously, she's there at the orgy. She's the one trying to save him the whole time. Like, you can't be here. This is a dangerous place. You're not supposed to be here. They know you're not supposed to be here. They're going to like hurt you. You got to get out of here. And then she eventually like sacrifices herself for him. But there's that moment where he like, it seems like he's about to sort of like go off with one of the women there. And then that doesn't happen. So he like, Tom Cruise has just edged this entire movie. And it's amazing because he's Tom Cruise, you know? Right. And so we watch Tom Cruise sort of like getting cucked and being edged and being so close to sex and being so confused and like hurt and horny and not knowing what to do.
It's great. It's also, there's all of that. And then there's also all of the class discussion. So just very quickly and, you know, as neatly as this movie could possibly be, it's just, you know, Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman are at the height of society, or so you think, but they're not even close to the height of society. And Sidney Pollack from the jump is essentially grooming Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Just in parallel to how the father of the costume shop is grooming his underage daughter,
the great Lily Sobieski,
as a sex slave. There's a lot of like people above you control you in every facet, including your sexuality, and they won't let you come unless they say so, is sort of a vibe. So all that's to say is I think the movie's enduring. I think it's spectacularly gorgeous. I think it's worth 10 rewatches. It's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, you can watch it 10 times. You're going to find something different every time. It's Eyes Wide Shut by Stanley Kubrick. The performances are amazing. Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman are incredible. They're incredible. I bet looking back, I'm sure there were days when they were like, why the fuck did we doing this? It ruined our marriage. It ruined our year. It ruined my money. But these days, like back at home, when they're like at home, like making breakfast in their head, they're like,
they're proud of Eyes Wide Shut.
God,
they're
I did Eyes Wide Shut. Of yeah. course. Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. It's the last Kubrick film. And it's a goodie. It's a banger. It's worth all of the hype. It is interesting. And we barely scratched the surface, Brett, but you know, that's just like
so much. It's such a puzzle box of a movie. The scene that cracks me up is when every time he, in his mind, he sees Nicole Kidman and the sailor having sex. Yeah. Like, so there's a scene where, so Nicole Kidman, like you said, she tells him like about this sexual fantasy she had for this sailor that they saw at a resort one time. He doesn't remember this person at all. Yeah. Right. And he loses his mind at the thought of her not just having sex with this guy, but throwing away her entire life to have sex with him, which is what she tells him, like looking him dead in the eye.
It's tough.
So, and then for the rest of the movie, Tom Cruise in his mind has this vision of Nicole Kidman and the sailor having sex. The reason it cracks me up is A, he didn't remember the guy. So the sailor in his mind is just Tom Cruise like imagining a sailor. And so the sailor that you see is like, he's so hot and he's dressed like officer and a gentleman. He's like in a full uniform.
Yeah. Anything
and
goes,
then
sailor.
Each time they come back, each time he comes back to the nightmare fantasy he's having, they're farther along in having sex. So like he's like undressing her, then there's foreplay. Then at one point he comes back and like the sailor has Nicole Kidman from behind and they're doing this. But every time I'm like, it's just funny to think Tom Cruise like, he's obsessing over it, but he's like playing out the entire sexual encounter in his mind over the course of the night. Those little scenes were kind of cracking me up. The movie is supposed to be funny. A lot of it is supposed to be funny. When that shot, talking about porno, that shot of they just cut to Tom Cruise in the doctor's office. And there's a woman sitting on the table there who like, in the late 90s looks like a Playboy cover model, right? She has that look and body and everything. But he's just like trying to be a doctor and is like, you know,
oh my
it's like,
God, that's so funny.
And then
you're underselling it. It's like the most voluptuous woman you've
so
ever seen.
Funny.
It's like comical.
And he's like,
and breathe in. And then Nicole Kidman has that great part where it's like, you're not thinking about it.
Yes. And she brings it as though she knew that scene had happened. She later is like, you know, don't you get turned on when you're like feeling their tits and like, don't you think they're thinking about Dr. Dicky and she's high at this
like,
point.
No, what the
oh,
hell?
God. But you know he is.
Of course, dude. crazy movie. I loved it. You know, look, here's what I think.
Yes.
Stanley Kubrick is frustrated that he missed the sexual revolution. He was like taken by the time sexual liberation was in the mainstream. And he's watching all of his youngers and all of his peers having all this like free love with all these beautiful women. And he's trapped in his little like hermetic cave reading a book.
True. You don't think he, I'm sure he,
Brett, fine. But I'm telling you,
I'm sure he enjoyed himself.
He was married three times. The first two times he was married for 5 years, And then he was in a very complicated marriage for 40 years that this woman, his third wife, begged him not to make Eyes Wide Shut after 2001 because it was embarrassing to her based on it's about their marriage and how he feels like, oh my God, I'm in another fucking marriage. I missed the sexual revolution because I'm just a little bit too aged out. And I feel like my whole entire life it has gone by. And now here we are. It's also dealing with the ramifications of the sexual revolution or like where we netted out, like post Clinton.
Yes.
And how we sort of didn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
Brett, I think.
No, because sex is like.
Let's go home and rewatch Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, yeah.
We gotta
sex
watch.
Is not liberating in this movie.
No,
sex,
not at all.
Sex is like.
It's a trap.
Is paranoia. It's paranoia. It's power. It's exploitation. It's how you enact cruelty.
The opposite
people.
Of pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, so I would say the movie starts to sort of slip through my fingers when I get really detailed with it, but I do think at the most general level, what you're saying is true, that Stanley Kubrick desperately wanted to make a movie about sex. Please, can I just fucking make a movie about fucking, please? That's all I've been wanting to do for 40 years. And he made
but he's a weird guy.
And he
so
made the weirdest, craziest, funniest movie about sex.
Yes.
That to me sums it up. I think I do wonder if Kubrick could hear us talking. I feel like it's one of the things where he'd be like, nah, you guys are totally off.
Nah, but, he would agree with me though.
I don't know. But I can say at the most general level.
He would nod.
It just feels like Kubrick, the reason he liked this movie so much is because he finally got to fuck this movie.
Dude, He's been edging.
You know, he's been edged by the industry for 40 years because they wouldn't like him made this movie. Kubrick finally got his fucking nut before he died. He made Eyes Wide Shut.
I guess so. He died 6 days after screening it.
He did.
To Nicole Kidman
and
Tom Cruise.
He did. Funny anecdote from this movie before we do the verdict, before we choose.
Yeah, verdict.
Todd Field, who plays the pianist, Nick Nightingale, and a really, really funny shot when they're doing the craziest sex ritual ever, and they zoom out and Nick's just like on his synth, just like so into it,
he's blindfolded,
like, he's just playing fucking like, you know, whatever, just like Vangelis on the synth, and he's so into it,
handles Messiah
while they're doing their crazy like pseudo Catholic sex ritual behind him. So Todd Field's in this movie. Todd Field, and I got this from the book, from the 1999 book, which I'd recommend, best movie year ever. So many good stories in there. But Todd Field says that on the set of Eyes Wide Shut, to put everybody at ease, to make everybody relax because of how sort of crazy and intense and long the shoots were, Stanley Kubrick, who was a big comedy fan and specifically was a big fan of Steve Martin's The Jerk, Stanley Kubrick would do Naven Johnson impressions. He would do impressions of Steve Martin in The Jerk for cast and crew to kind of amuse them. I don't know anything more than that, but let your imagination run wild. Stanley Kubrick doing The Jerk.
Do you know in the 70s, because he tried to make this movie every other year.
Yes.
In the 70s, he really tried to make it with Steve Martin.
That's right.
And with Woody Allen.
That's right.
Because he was like, oh, maybe it's like a really kind of a funny sex dark thing with a dark edge.
Yep.
And then over time, things change. And
God, I'm so glad Woody didn't have anything. Didn't get anywhere.
Getting Eyes Wide Shut with Woody Allen.
You know what? I had a weird vision because I was trying to think of other like big, like the idea of a celebrity power couple doing it was so perfect.
Well, that he was, it had to be a couple.
Yes. I had this vision of like this movie with Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson in it. I can't stop thinking about it.
I forget who he was with at the time, but the other couple that was kind of like talking to Kubrick was Alec Baldwin.
Kim Basinger.
That's exactly who it was.
Yeah, those
two were like, oh, maybe we'll do Alec and Kim. And then thank God Nicole and Tom showed up at the chateau.
It had to be.
They're amazing. Well, they made, it's like, you know, like Hugh or what the fuck. It's like The Dark Knight. You know, it's like Dark Knight's a great movie, but because Heath Ledger went crazy, it's like extra good.
Right, right.
You know, I'm being very flippant. but you know what I mean. Same with Eyes Wide Shut. Like, Eyes Wide Shut's amazing. Plus all of the other stuff, too. And Cruise and Kidman are just incredible, both as actual actors in the actual movie, and the whole myth around the movie is still, like, exciting. Brett, I know what I is going to pick. What are you going
to
pick?
Well, and it's also interesting to think, too, in retrospect, because at the time they were such a power couple, celebrity couple, but in retrospect now we think of how, you know, you think of how weird their, how weird we know Tom Cruise is now, how weird their marriage was. You know, that famous picture of Nicole Kidman, like when she finalized the divorce and she's like walking down the street like she's in Singing in the Rain.
No, it's weird. It's so cool.
So weird in retrospect.
And, like, you know, I was reading a lot this week where, yeah, you know, there's tons of, oh, it ruined their marriage. And Nicole Kidman in interviews
They got divorced in 2001.
Yeah, a year and a half later, they got divorced. So, but Nicole Kidman said, like, look, it was part of the years of us falling apart. But, you know, it wasn't 100% of it, obviously, because Tom Cruise is insane, had to do with it. But it makes the movie better. What are you going to pick? Now I feel like you're just stalling for time because you're afraid, Brett. You're afraid. Can I remind the fans at home what we're about to do?
Yes, please do. Folks, please remind them of the rules. Folks, I'm going to think about this.
At Weekend at Bergman's, we have a job. Job number one, be honest. Job number two, pick which of our movies goes in the canon, which we can enjoy for the rest of our days, and what movie goes in the trash canon.
That's right.
And folks, if a movie goes in the trash can and one's going to have to, we can never watch that movie.
Never watch
again.
It again for the rest
That's
of our
promise.
Lives.
That's a swear. So. I bet my boots on that. So Brett, we have a choice. We have Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut versus American Pie, both totemic pillars of 1990s filmmaking and both ending the first century of film. American Pie came out the week after Eyes Wide Shut. Like, this is
That's
the
crazy.
This is the cultural sexual conversation this week in America. Is, hey, did you see Eyes Wide Shut? Yeah. Hey, did you see American Pie? Yeah. Brett, which movie did you like better?
All right.
And you have to be honest.
I have to be honest. And before I tell you that, I'm going to let this poll run, this Kubrick poll on Patreon, run through next Thursday. So we'll know the final results.
Oh, good idea. Good idea.
We'll know the final results by next
Who's up right now? Open there.
Right now.
I know what I'm voting for when I get home.
Right now, let's see the current results. There's a tie. The Shining has moved into the lead.
Damn.
The Shining has moved into the lead. And then 2001 and Clockwork Orange tied for second.
Jesus.
Barry Lyndon, Dr. Strangelove, Spartacus also getting votes.
I love that. Where's Killer's Kiss, Brett?
No votes for Killer's Kiss. Okay. It is on there, though. It
oh, good, good, good.
I start with Killer's Kiss. There's one before Killer's Kiss.
Real quick.
On there.
Real
yeah.
quick.
Yes.
Favorite Kubrick film?
Me?
And you got to be honest.
You have to be honest. I have to be honest. For me, it comes down. It's between Barry Lyndon and The Shining.
But you got to pick one, Brett. We're all going to hold you to it. We're all going to be mean about it.
I'm going to say Barry Lyndon is my favorite.
Yeah, Barry Lyndon's great. My favorite is 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Do you know why? Because it rocks.
I know.
So does Barry Lyndon. Like, they're both, what do you do with 2A pluses? Like, whatever.
It's almost like, which one did you watch most recently?
Well, which one did help you fall in love with movies?
That's
and 2001
it.
Was like well, a see, big you know thing what? For me, you know?
Well, that's why honesty is such an interesting thing. Right. Because the reason I said Barry Lyndon is because I have to be honest to like the full, like I've been watching Kubrick movies since I was in high school, and Barry Lyndon was the one that just was so meaningful to me for a long time and just made me think about movies in a different way.
Right, exactly.
And just made me fall in love with like long shots and things. Like it just did so much for my understanding of like appreciation of movies and cinematic language and stuff. So I felt like I had to say Barry. I felt like not saying Barry Lyndon would be like betraying a family member.
Ding,
you know what I mean?
Ditto for
Whereas
2001.
Like, if you ask me what one do I want to put on tonight, probably The Shining.
Which one I'm putting on tonight? Well, actually, I'll go first because this is suspenseful.
Yes, here we go.
You.
We got to answer this.
Which
damn
one would
question.
I put on
We're
tonight?
Delaying.
I still have the DVD, folks. I pick Eyes Wide Shut. I really enjoyed American Pie. It was very funny, but this is a difficult game we play, Brett. And the movie that I liked better, I was just swept away, and I was just standing at the TV and pointing at it and telling my wife, "See, look at how pretty that is." And she's like, "Sit the fuck down, Joe." I'm picking Eyes Wide Shut, Brett. American Pie, Eyes Wide Shut, and you could be honest.
It was harder than I thought it was going to be. I had a fun blast, kind of a nostalgic trip watching American Pie. By the end of the day, I got to pick Eyes Wide
Shut. Come on, yes.
It is such a bizarre, interesting movie. It is gorgeous. It is weird. It is funny.
Yes.
It's such a moment. It's Cruise and Kidman at the height of their powers, and it is Kubrick's last thing he did. It's his last statement, and to him, he says most central statement. And it's a movie that, like, for me, what's on screen and the context of the movie just makes it so interesting, and the context of the movie becomes part of the enjoyment for me. It matters that it is Kubrick's last movie. It matters that it meant so much to him.
Definitely,
that stuff plays into my enjoyment of the movie and plays into my sort of like leaning forward in my seat, trying to pick up any clues I can find all over the place. I love this movie. It's the messiest Kubrick movie. You know, it's like it seems like some things are like. Was that what you wanted to do there?
The answer is yes.
Moments. Yes. Okay, fine. But it still feels like a little messier and a little looser than Kubrick's other movies. But I like that too. There's really nothing about it that I don't enjoy. Although it's not my favorite Kubrick, it is, I like it
more.
Better than American Pie. So that's two votes for Eyes Wide Shut. Eyes Wide Shut. Welcome to the canon, baby.
Wow.
You made it. The first of the 1999 movies in the canon.
That's exciting.
And at the end of this series, we will be putting together a bracket where we pit all of the winners against each other to pick the best movie, the movie that we like the most of 1999. I don't know how we're going to do that.
Here's my little prediction. Over the next 10, 12 weeks of Bergman's 99, you're going to come back. We're both going to come back to Eyes Wide Shut. I feel like we're going to be talking about this movie for the next 8 weeks. And then when Oscar redo time comes around on Bergman's, me and you are going to be really thinking about Eyes Wide Shut. That's my little prediction.
I'm so glad I get to watch it again. I will be watching it again, maybe tonight. That did not factor into my answer, but I will be.
It's so good.
Because look, I've picked movies that I've liked before on this show that I have no intention of ever rewatching.
Yeah, you got to be honest.
Eyes Wide Shut, though, I will be rewatching.
We're watching
it. Yes.
A couple times.
Yes.
Brett, but here's the gag, son.
Here we go.
There's been a lot of good movies in 1999.
There's so many. There's
and
so
next
many.
Week,
what's
Brett,
next week?
We got two bangers.
All right,
guys,
I
couldn't stay away for 1 second. I'm sorry, arrest me. It's horror week.
Yes.
We're talking 90s horror. We're talking 1999 horror. And specifically, we're putting two favorites head to head. You're going to have to be on the Patreon for it, folks. Do not miss it. We have The Blair Witch Project versus Brendan Fraser's The Mummy.
Oh my God.
Blair Witch, The Mummy. Blair Witch, The Mummy.
So you have almost like old school universal horror versus like the
new
newest
school
of the
universal
new school
horror.
Found footage
yeah.
horror. Wow. Ooh.
It's going to be so exciting. And I can't wait to see everyone there.
You really
and
don't like this look? I really like this mask.
Brett, you took it off because your nose kept bonking into the mic.
Well, that's just you know, not all fashion is practical. You know,
we support your mask. We support your Venetian plague mask.
I want you to go home.
I want you to sit in your back house. I want you to watch Eyes Wide Shut. I want you to wear that mask while you do it. Can you do that for me? Take a picture. I'll take a picture of you through the window. I'm going to show your wife and son. All right. And wear that tank top.
Thank you for joining us on Weekend at Bergman's and Movies Baby tonight. We will be back next week, same time, same place. Make this appointment television, people, because we're going to put a lot of work into this show. It's going to keep getting bigger and better. Thursday
Absolutely.
Nights at 6 p.m. Pacific. You know where you're going to be. You're going to be watching Movies Baby and Weekend at Bergman's. We're going to have a lot of fun.
I'm not going anywhere, baby. I'm watching a movie right here on this cool-ass TV.
All right, let's wave our way out like they do on SNL. Bye.
Bye. Should we bring Dave Chappelle up?
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.